like his hair is mediocre.
He does have a red bun.
Depending on the movie.
Yeah, depending on the movie.
Oh, sure. Okay, fine. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So why is it that he somehow is still so attractive to so many people?
And people want to hear the next thing that comes out of my mouth when I get into these conversations and these topics.
The hotness, you know, fuck around and find out scale, what is it? Right, when you're very hot, you get away with more crazy shit. Don't buy your book on Amazon, How to Be a Shaman, and then become one and start doing ayahuasca sessions, right? Like, I'm assuming that that's gatekept information for a reason.
That's not me. That's right? I'm not the one holding down the low vibrations here. I'm the one elevating, and I'm telling you that this is an investment. And if you don't think so, then that's okay. Then go on and keep struggling.
Hello, everyone. A little reminder, this is hashtag Team No Delusion. Nothing is edited. Nothing is polished up. Everything is raw. Everything is straight imported onto the podcast because I don't want to participate in none of that Hollywood nonsense. Everything has to look perfectly. Everything has to look fake. Everything has to look a certain way. So you'll get the raw. A little before we go into the episode, I've been having and receiving lots of requests on information like what are my offerings right now, what's happening, what will be happening. And as I am currently kind of in a, aside from being in a rebranding, I'm trying to figure out a level of my own methods right now. So there will be another Dollar Academy, which is the money for 6 months. I'm currently practicing and working and refining methods for a discipline room, how to become a luck magnet. I have redneck magic coming up. I have rural life. I have Louboutin riches. I have everything. Everything is coming up. Be sure to be subscribed to my email list on thedollaracademy.com. And if you can't find it or if it's too much effort, just hit me with a DM and just give me your name and email and I'll put you there on manually myself. I have lots of good stuff coming from tiny luck exponential magnet amplifications for like $9 to several thousand dollar programs. So I promise you I'm trying to cater to as broad as possible and I'm trying to get everyone involved. So yeah. Get involved, and I can't wait to see you. It's your favorite opinionated legendary Amerislav. This is my shortest version now that we're going with. And today at Fearless Wealth, we are here with the Diamonds and Demons series. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Barra. I'm fine.
You look so pretty. I love this. Like, this works. This color scheme works so well for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I love it. I love it. So I have several topics to dive in. And one thing is that, well, as everyone knows and hates about me, and you are much more eloquent in your wording in that than I am, is that I perceive actual hierarchies in the world, financial ones, aesthetic ones, ability ones, right? Achievements, et cetera, et cetera. And I believe that depending on where your lane, air quotes, and hierarchy is, allows you to speak and the weight of your voice. But before we fully go into that, I was watching American Made with Tom Cruise. Okay. And there is something that I was looking at Tom Cruise, right? Because this is a guy who has hundreds, if not thousands, awards and, you know, labels as his most sexy man, etc. And I'm looking at him and if you analyze him aesthetically, he's not pretty at all. Like, he has a wild nose. His teeth are crooked. He's short as fuck. Misaligned, right? He doesn't have, like, an excellent jawline. He doesn't have, like, a ripped body. Like, his hair is mediocre.
He does have a ripped body.
Depending on the movie.
Yeah, depending on the movie. I was going to say, okay, I just but Mission Impossible, that boy is hard as fuck.
Oh, sure. Okay, fine. No, absolutely. 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 So why is it that he somehow is still so attractive to so many people? Right? And that's my open question. Why is it that some people are so, can be aesthetically underachieving, right? But still be very attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's presence. There's more than just being attractive. I've seen plenty of attractive women who kind of blend in and don't really stand out either. They don't have like a presence when they walk in the room. And it is how they comport themselves. So for example, and this is not to toot my own horn, but just to kind of give an example. I don't go in looking like, you know, like I just spent 3 hours contouring my face or anything like that. I know that. Like, I don't do that. I ain't got time for that. So like when I go into a room, I know that I'm not coming with like all of my flair going, right? I'll dress up, I'll put on makeup, I'll wear a nice outfit, but I'm not looking to like strike anything in particular. But what I do know is this, is that I can carry a conversation with somebody to where I'm very engaging. And people want to hear the next thing that comes out of my mouth when I get into these conversations and these topics. And I'm kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to topics. It's not like I can only talk about the one thing and then that's my one trick and that's it. I'll indulge any line of conversation, and I'm really good at carrying it and going. And because of that, I know that I can actually do more than just get a one night stand. I can actually get a whole friendship or a full relationship out of people that I engage. I can. If I wanted to, I could go there and I could do that. I'm not big on the networking, so I don't do all that. I used to early in my career in advertising, you have plenty of opportunities to do that. But I didn't have to go for the one night stand. You know, I could go for the long haul. I could say, you know, I'm not going home with you. I'm not hooking up with you. But call me. And then they'd call me and we'd go out and I'd actually have like longer conversations about various things. And they found me engaging, right? So I'm not the prettiest girl in the room. And I know where I'm at in that regard, because there are people who put far more effort and wore far more nicer clothes than I did and did a lot more to dress themselves up. But I also know that I have a presence when I walk in. And part of that is the fact that I don't put out the beacon that says I'm looking to hook up. There's something that maybe it's a pheromone. I don't fucking know, you know, but there's something about a person where you can tell if this person is here to hook up or is here to just have a good time or here to just whatever, and isn't necessarily looking for anything. And they don't give off that sort of desperation for approval or for affirmation or anything like that. They're just there. Right. And that kind of confidence tends to lend itself to suddenly you're very attractive to me and I don't know why, right? So like there are people who can be like meh in the appearance scale, but they come in hot. They come in, they don't give a singular fuck whether or not somebody talks to them or not. They don't care if you give them a compliment. They don't care if you make any comment. They walk in and heads turn and it's like, why am I paying attention to you? I can't even put my finger on it, but I can't stop watching what you're doing. You're moving through this crowd. He has dad bod, right? He's not like Jason Momoa. He's like, you know, like, I don't know, Kevin James or something. And he comes in, he's, you know, but it's like, but he's charming and he's smiling and he's making eye contact and you're picking up on all of the social cues of how they behave when they enter the room. And that's that extra, you know, that suddenly airbrushes a lot of their flaws away. You know, like, I'm not paying attention to your weird nose and I'm not paying attention to your, you know, to your misaligned teeth. I'm looking at the fact that you have such a presence that I don't know that I have to keep paying attention to you, you know?
Right. And not only, well, and I would even argue that when it comes to, you know, sensuality perhaps, or, you know, more romantic dynamics, that now your odd nose, because of your charm, it's all of a sudden very sexy too. Because we have all seen, like culturally wise, right? When there's a big, you know, a movie star or whatever who has this weird quirk, all of a sudden that quirk, whether it's a big nose, you know, an oddly shaped, this and this, starts to gain attraction in the social and cultural norms because someone made it attractive. And just as you were talking, what popped into my head is because I'm very much of the position that everyone should stay in their fucking lane, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which I translate in stay within your hierarchy, whatever position that is within the various hierarchies, right? Because sometimes you see someone behaving, you're like, girl or boy, you're not pretty enough to get away with shit like that. Mm-mm. Probably also the hotness, you know, fuck around and find out scale. What is it? Right. When you're very hot, you get away with more crazy shit. But there, because with that, with understanding hierarchies, you also acknowledge and become self-aware of what your place in the hierarchy is, which is various depending on where you are, who you talk to. Right. Which then makes it even more attractive because self-awareness is very attractive. So where do we have, where or how, I'm not even sure what my question is, but help me, like where, because there's something, there can be something very attractive about someone who does not care about hierarchies, right? And perhaps overconfident, but what is the difference between overconfident and delusional slash annoying?
Right. Yeah, no, I would say that's a big problem with women in particular when they're dating men, is they conflate arrogance for, and they confuse arrogance for confidence. Hence the desire to go for the bad boy, right? They're confusing the two. The signal looks very similar and they're not picking up the nuance of the difference. So the difference is that a confident person doesn't need to prove it. They're just gonna do it. Like, my husband doesn't need to sit there and tell me he's gonna kick somebody's ass. It's implied that if somebody steps up, that man is ready to go. And that's it. And he gives off that vibe. People fucking know it. They just know when he walks around.
Absolutely.
They just know. Like, he's 5'4". We are hobbits. We are literal small people. And like, but he's no
just
fucking
small.
Joke. Yeah, mm-hmm. We are. We're littles and we live in Mordor. And we, you know, and it's all.
Well, and ironically, what happens when you see you and your husband is that my first rational response to y'all are so much shorter than in my mind, because you have big energy. And it doesn't matter how long I know you.
Right. And it doesn't matter.
It repeats itself in my head.
Right. A lot of people say that. I've had a lot of people tell me that I'm much shorter than they thought I was. And I'm just like, what did you think 5'4 looked like? You know? But it's true. Like, I think there's, like, I think there's a thing where I think, and that was something that I had to work and fine tune for myself as well, because I did. I remember being attracted to certain guys, and I can look back and honestly tell myself that wasn't, I know what I was looking for. That just wasn't it. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted a man who was sure in himself, who mm-hmm. commanded a presence in the room, who could handle his business and take care of me, you know, like, and I would feel safe around him. And I was checking all these boxes and they were performing that, but they weren't that. And there's a difference, right? A person who's full of it and is really just an empty shell of a man, you find out pretty quickly, because you can start to see their insecurities play out, right?
Or at least I feel that this tend to be more prevalent in men than in women, whereas, And I'm just going to use a very, very extreme example, but like the pickup artistry, right? What's being sold is, if you have a ripped body, and you, perhaps you do get the Lambo, whatever, I don't know. But you talk this way, right? The talking this way. If you mimic all those things, you will get the bitches. Whereas I can see how emulating someone in a template, there's a disembodiment, right? Which is what embodiedness is, what the root of confidence,
right?
Like in the body, lived being it,
right?
Versus mm-hmm. pretending to be it.
Correct.
Because they you can say the same words.
Right. So that's the same thing as somebody stealing an idea from you. If the seed started and germinated in your head, it's indigenous to your head and your life. And so you can steal my ideas. You just won't know what to do with it once you put it in your head. You don't know, you have no idea its roots. You have no idea it's, you know, where it's supposed to go, what the logical progression is. It wasn't yours to begin with. You never gave birth to this idea. You stole it. And so you put it in your head and it's, and it just fizzles out and it withers away. And that's the same thing. If you're not authentically living, and I hate to use the word authentic because it is kind of played out, but if you're not, if this isn't who you are and you're just faking it to make it, it's going to show. It's going to show because this is not you. It's not to say that somebody couldn't pull off, you know, being all those things. They could, you know, I think some people, it's their brand. But there's other people who try to do that, and you're just like, that's not really who you are. And we all kind of see it, you know, and there's girls like that too. I mean, you know, but we pretend for different reasons, right? Women are trying to be more aesthetic because men look for pretty things, and men are trying to posture themselves and puff their chest because we're looking for strong things and secure things. But I mean, that's the basics of it. But I mean, I think, but when we're just trying to mimic what we see and we're not actually, there's no discipline behind it. And there's no, like, it isn't like real. You're just going through the motions. People pick up on that too. Like, there's a social cue for it, you know?
Right. And I feel, but what I, not but, and I feel like that's one of the harder things, and you've been farther removed from that than I have been, as I've been dating significantly shorter than you are. But like the online scene, while I'm really good at discernment, it's so easy to see people type again, because you can use the same words as a confident person. Right. But the majority of the social cues, unless you're really tuned in into whatever the subject is that that person is talking to, they can fool anyone. The social cues will be more in person. I'm an extrovert, so I like my people. Like, I'm like, okay, you know, in theory, we are a nice match. Let's meet up in person, because I can instantly click, 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 click. Whereas I can do that over text or I can, but only to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's limited. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, and that's the thing is like that online life does kind of filter out a lot of that. A lot, you know, like you have the opportunity to edit what you say, you know, you can, and you can curate a lot longer. You can take time to respond and pick your words more cautiously and, you know, and really be scripted. Whereas if you put me on the spot and ask me a question and just drop it on me and I don't know what's coming, I got to give you something back. I can't just say, let me get back to you on that. I don't know what my position is on that. I mean, you know, like that's not a thing. So like, and they can't get caught off that way. So it's like, if you say, you know, if you're like, what are your feelings on this important issue? And they're like, I never gave it a second thought. Then it's like, oh, no time to go and look it up. No time to, you know, to Google it and give you my talking points or someone else's talking points.
And see what someone else has said. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and try to anticipate what you think I want to see or hear. You have to just say it. So it's like, that is the ultimate test, right? Yeah.
I love it. I'm going to pull up the second subject.
I'm excited.
Okay. So someone said, I will never understand the concept of gatekeeping general information of career and business opportunities. There's enough room for all of us to win. To which I said, I disagree, because I think intent matters a lot and the ability to process and be able to handle certain information. Obviously, I know you're talking about information on how to get rich or, you know, how to use something for your benefit, which is all fair and cute. However, clearly we don't want certain bad guys to have the blueprint to, for example, AI, in the same way that, you know, we want the good guys to have the AI blueprint, right? So, and I feel the same goes for, you know, cultural things, habits, ritual, and whatever we think of a spiritual industry, you know, spirituality. I for fucking sake, hope you do. You don't just, you know, don't buy your book on Amazon, How to Be a Shaman, and then become one and start doing ayahuasca sessions, right? Like, I'm assuming that that's gate-kept information for a reason. And as someone who had two tattoo shops, the same goes for that, right? Like, everyone can grab a tattoo machine and learn on fucking pigskin, but there's a whole process aside from the learning, also on starting at the lowest part of the ladder, right? Just to appreciate certain. So anyway, I was called a hater. I was called low vibes. I was called, well, everyone came at me, which is fine. So I figured I'm going to just pull it into the podcast. I'm going to tag them later. But yeah,
Well, there's a couple of things to that, right? There's a couple of aspects to that. The first, the most glaring is that when people have to pay for things, they tend to treat it better. And they tend to be more serious about it. So when you charge $10,000 for a retreat or a session or a master course or whatever the hell it is.
Right. No, and I need to emphasize, because it's so good that you said it. The people who tend to the anti-capitalists or the fucking leftover, the socialists, it's always the people who are broke, first of all, because no person who has worked for their money, disagrees with this. If you mean to tell me that you treat the shoes for $5 from Walmart the same you treat your Louboutins that you had to save up for that are $2,000, I'm going to call you a fucking liar.
Thank you. That's exactly right. So that's it, right? Like, having skin in the game means you treat it better. I mean, there's, it's like, and it's not to put down people who rent, but there is a remarkable difference between the people who rent a house and buy a house and how they treat their house. You have skin in the game. You are now vested. And when you're vested, you tend to show your ass up. Like, college versus high school, people who had to pay for college versus people who had it paid for treated it differently. People who paid for college, their ass was there on time every day. And they, because they paid for it, right?
Like they, I mean. So right? good.
But that's right.
And so it's like, good.
The other piece of that is, especially when you're, if she's talking about knowledge in particular, me being able to put out a piece of data or knowledge and open sourcing that is fine. But how do you apply that knowledge is the wisdom that's taught. You're not teaching me that 2 + 2 = 4, and I ain't paying you for it. I can look that up, okay? But you can teach me what implications that has, how that's applied, how that affects me in real life. And I'm making this up, but it could have been anything, right? That's the variable. But you're going to teach me the applied science of it, not just the data. The data, I could go look that up. And to be fair, that's true of any masterclass. If I wanted to just look up data points and how to, all of that exists for free. That is that there is no gatekeeping on that. The gatekeeping is how do I curate that information and how do I apply that information and what's the secret sauce? I can go buy all the ingredients to bake a fucking cookie, but there are only so many people who can explain the science behind why I need cornstarch in it or don't, and what happens if I use margarine versus butter, and what happens when I use cake flour versus high gluten flour. All of that, how it all comes together, how to make the perfect texture and all of that. Somebody went and tested that shit out in their kitchen multiple times and failed before they actually came up with the final solution. And that costs money. Right. That's why you pay for culinary class. Okay.
Right. And using your specific example as someone who teaches about money, right? Like the general information, using her language, is have more income, have less outcome, boom, you're rich. Right? Like that's the simplistic data. And
there
then
is,
I'm a the
tree right there.
Like they, right. That is how it is. Like 6 bullet points, that's it. And I'm going to teach you about what happened, like assuming you know how to make money. I'm going to teach you how scarcity feels in your body and how you want to spend or how you want to hurdle up or how your body just goes into nervousness and stress. I'm going to teach you about, because people can tell you, hey, you want to climb the Mount Everest? Cool. Get these shoes, you, and go. I will teach you what to do when your lungs are on fucking fire because you're running up the Mount Everest and your mind is telling you to fucking turn around.
Right.
I'm going to teach you that.
Right. So that's a different, that is gate kept because that is a secret sauce. That is a proprietary innovation that you built out of common knowledge. You took all this different things that people go through every day. You took things that are easily Googled on the computer, and then you came up with a way in which to look at it, to work with it, to navigate it. That's your map. You're selling the map. You're not selling the components. So this is, and I think that's the, and if people don't know the difference, then fine. You're not my client and you're not my target audience.
Sure. Sure. And I'm low vibe and I'm a hater. That's fine.
I'm not, that's not me. That's you, right? I'm not the one holding down the low vibrations here. I'm the one elevating, and I'm telling you that this is an investment. And if you don't think so, then that's okay. Then go on and keep struggling if you want. Right. I mean, that's on you, though. Yeah.
Well, and specifically, you know, the language is being used, career and business opportunities. There is a reason why, we can use investments, right? Like, yeah. like you put money in an investment account, you choose where to invest, and that's it. Okay, but who's going to teach you how to fucking invest, how to make choices, what to invest in? How to find your own language in investing? Are you going to be a value based? Are you going to be economy based? Are you going to be ID based future? Like which angle are you doing and why? And what's the definition of all those angles, right?
Yeah.
So that the difference, yeah, again, investing, easy. Right. Open account, put money in, and then.
Yeah. But that's the thing, right? It's like typically people who are criticizing that type of thing honestly believe that there's some silver bullet to success that exists, that all I can shoot poverty in the heart with one silver bullet and everything just, you know, it's all taken care of.
That's such a hot phrase. I need to write it down.
That's not even how investing works, right? You need a diversified investment portfolio. Yep. There's not a single soul on the planet who knows anything about investing would ever say, just put everything in this one stock. No, you don't do that. You'll lose your ass. So everything is diversified. So are solutions. And so is wealth building. So is wealth maintenance. It's diversified. It's decentralized. That is the whole point. So everybody has their little combination that worked for them. And they're saying, okay, when I do this plus this plus this plus this plus then it all comes together and it looks like this, right? But you got to do all of this work and you got to pull all these levers and you got to do this much and you can't go too crazy over here. You can't do that. And what we're doing is we're explaining this logic that's behind our success and we're trying to share it. But the idea that she thinks you're sitting on one answer is already ignorant. It's already very myopic to me. You know, like she's already seeing it as she has the one answer. No, she fucking doesn't. No, she fucking doesn't. She doesn't have one fucking answer. She's got a very multifaceted, layered answer to all of this that's going to take a long time to unpack and get you to a place where you abandon your old habits and assume new ones. And I mean, it's not the one thing. And I think people who come in, who come in hot that way are just, that's what they think it is. And it's not that. And so they already have a misconception.
They already launching from a different / wrong base.
Correct.
With that being said, because right, there's a kind of riffing on the silver bullet towards poverty, which is extremely poetic, very hot. I love it. Well done, as per usual. My hat off, my gloves off, tick, 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 tick. how I feel like, and I'm going to reflect on my own students right now. One of the things that people most struggle with is the not only the acceptance, but the full-on embracing that whatever goal you have, right? And I'm going to use the term like wealth, success, fit body, right? That they're not singular events, even though if they're perhaps long-term singular events, right? It's not a two-year situation and then you're done, right? It's a lifelong thing. And I promise we will jump right back into the conversation and the episode. But in the meantime, I would like you to hit the like, hit the subscribe, hit the share, and mostly get involved on my socials, get involved on my Instagram, get involved in the conversation on Facebook, get on my email list. You know how much I have been, let's say it, ostracized and removed from certain spaces. So if my Facebook one day disappears, you won't know where to find me. So get on my email list on dollaracademy.com. Thank you so much. Meanwhile, snap a little picture of it, do a screenshot, share it on your Instagram, tag me. I will absolutely reshare. And any feedback and everything is possible is very welcome too. Thank you so much. Now let's go back to the episode. And how do we train ourselves to a deeper level? Because even someone as me, I'm all for long term. Even still, I'm feeling impatient, right? Or like kind of like
Right.
bratty, like why do I have to do this like 10 year and not 5 year or something? It doesn't matter, right? Whatever it is. How do we deepen and train that acceptance and that embracing for the longer journey? And where did we fail in learning that as a society?
So there's a couple things in that for me, and I'll tell you how I look at it. The first thing I did was I abandoned the idea of expectations. Like I just abandoned it altogether. Like it's just a useless
But
term.
how, okay, so this is the thing. We're walking the Mount Everest, right? I can say, because there's a difference between embodied. Oh, and I know where I want to go with it. And versus, like, I can rationally say I won't have expectations. My body will fully disagree, right? There's still something in my body. And I think what we don't talk about enough, and I was hoping we could take, or we could perhaps layer that somewhere in there, is that we expect that certain certain skills feel a certain way. And I'm gonna give an example. I always say I have nothing but time and patience. However, I do not feel patient. I'm very patient, but I don't feel patient. You know, I'm very disciplined, but I don't feel disciplined because I expect to be patient, that it to feel like at ease and restful and calm and trusting and confident. Not at all. I'm still fucking annoyed, right? But I'm just do you do patience. You don't feel patience, right? So how do
No, that
you
makes sense.
actually do the letting go of the expectations and feel it?
Okay. So for me, I will say that I didn't leave the void there. I didn't just abandon expectations and put nothing in its place because that is a hole, right? Because you can't have some sort of ambition, vision, plan out in the future and not have something to cling to, right? So there has to be rungs to this. And there has to, but it has to be more tangible and it has to be rooted in reality. So there's a couple of things, right? The first is that I'm by nature and by career, I am a planner. I literally take tens of millions of dollars of client money and tell them exactly how they're going to spend it and what it's going to do for them. And then I'm constantly going back and optimizing it. Okay. So I'm doing that all day, every day. That's what I do for a living. And the way in which it works, and especially because I have to train my own clients to calm down because they want to make knee-jerk reactions and they want to do really, they want to do crazy shit in the middle of the stream. And I'm like, no. Bring it down, And so how does that conversation look like? And that's the same conversation you'd be having with yourself essentially, right? So the first thing is that we put away the expectations and instead what we do is we have standards, right? There are industry standards. You have to meet these benchmarks. That's just the thing. That's just a given. You don't, those aren't unyielding. Those are real things that you put in your head that you say, look, I am the type of person that's on fucking time. I'm on time because I'm a punctual person, not because somebody else owes me that or because I owe them that. This is not, no, I'm not bartering myself. What I'm doing is I'm defining myself. So there's a big difference between saying, if I do this, I expect you to do that. That goes away. I'm not, there's no reciprocity in this. This is one-sided. And the reason why it's one-sided is because you only have control over yourself. And that is a reality you really have to wrap your head around because that's hard. A lot of people have a hard time accepting that they only can control themselves, which means they can only, that their control over the world is very finite. And that unto itself is already frustrating. So I can't control time. I can't control weather. I can, there's just shit that, okay? Like, I can't control physics. I can't control a lot of things. So we're just going to be cool and work with what we've got, and that's real, right? So all the standards and everything that is virtuous to me is something that I do regardless of what happens outside and regardless of how people treat me. So when people say, well, respect is earned, it's like, no, I'm a civil, respectable person. I don't need you to be civil with me in order for me to be a civil human being, because I'm this way. Your actions don't define me. And so I am this way. And so that's a type of conviction that you just have to have, that you have to start saying, look, what kind of person am I? Am I the type of person that changes with the weather and changes with everybody else's seasons around me? Or am I a consistent motherfucker? Because if I'm not, then that's on me, right? That is me. I'm the one that's actually being the variable. And I'm creating, I'm creating turbulence when there's already enough turbulence around me. I'm also turbulent, and that's no good. So that's the thing, is it's like there's a certain amount of responsibility people have to take for themselves. I can't make you do that. Like, I can't make people take responsibility for themselves.
So, and I'm very public about this, and I'm even public about this with, students and people who do pay me to teach them, that I teach them about being in the void, right? So it's being a non-reactive. And it's attention holding, right? Like, not doing the knee jerk. That's because everything in you wants to do that thing.
That's right.
And I feel that the more outside of that context, using business as example, the more counter nature stuff you practice outside of business, the better you also will be in holding that void tension in business, right? And I'm always jumping to cold plunging, working out, whatever hard thing it is that you're doing, it translates into all the skills overall. However, or perhaps not however, and for someone as, because I have a very obsessive personality, right? So my trick, and again, I'm very public about this, is that I obsess over this thing, business as reference. I go full in, do all the mundane things that I could do. And then in the void time, when there is nothing I can do, I obsess over something new or else.
Yeah.
Right. That's why I'm able to do natural championship in archery, because I focused so hard on business that I needed something else to focus on.
Yeah.
And that's why I became so good at archery, right? That's the only reason, because I just needed something new to focus on. That's also why I learned a lot of languages, because I need to shift, because I cannot completely drop that thing that I obsessed over. And again, and I always have the feeling that I'm doing it wrong, because I'm just tricking myself. It's absolutely working for me, right? Yeah. But that's why I like to speak with this about other people about, like, are you just like floating around in your void? Like, you've done all the things, you're holding the tension of not knee jerking, or and are you calm? How does that feel for you? Like, what are you doing?
So then in that, so for me, I don't like being idle, but I don't necessarily have to be physically active doing a thing.
Sure.
Mine is more like, as long as my mind is working on something, it's okay. Like, my mind just needs to be, it's more my mind than anything. I mean, I could go out and do physical things, that's fine, but that's not essential to me. What is essential is, for example, when I have to talk my clients off a cliff, right? And I tell them, look, this is the plan. This is how we're doing it. These are the executions. This is the timing. This is how you're going to work. All of it's coming together. This is it. Here's the whole thing in one little spreadsheet. And somebody puts some distracting shit in their head where they think, oh, I gotta do this now. I gotta drop everything and do this thing, right? And I'm just like, wait a minute, we talked about this. I'm like their conscience. So I'm the one that says,
that's okay. So good.
It is. I am their conscience. And I am. And I tell them.
I love that.
So my thing is I never say no. I never say no. I say, great, let's fucking do this. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yes. I said, it's all I have to do is cut this, get rid of that, and hack up your plan and make this fit right in there, and we'll do it. You ready? I'll do it today. And they're like, wait, no. Don't do that. Oh, wait, don't do it? You sure? Because I thought we were hyped for this. I'm hyped for this. These are my, this is how I say no. I make them say no. I make them say no because I'm like, here's what it costs you. You still willing to go? Because if you're willing to go, I'll go. 100%. I match everybody's energy. Let's go. And they're just like, because I'm the only, and because everybody asks me this, how do you say no to your clients? I never say no. Fuck no. I never say no. I'm like, fuck yes, every time. And they're just like, you just let them do whatever they want? I said, I let them figure out what they want. I walk them through it and I figure out what you want. When you figure out what you want, and that's the dialogue. That's the dialogue. What the fuck do you really want? Because is it worth throwing all this shit and all this work and everything you've done out the fucking window so you can get this one little thing right now? Because I gotta do this thing. Like, you tell me, is that really what you want?
Right. So we're doing the transactional and payoff conversation. Losing battles for winning wars, even in bigger, and I've had specifically this conversation, the big war that I'm winning is me being in America, the battles I had to lose for that, you know, that directly. And a friend of mine, I had just recently share mine lost battles for that. And she's like, I would have killed that person. I'm like, don't think that I didn't want to kill that person too.
100%.
Oh, no. I'm just being like, okay, I can do this, right? I can do the killing of said person. That means that either I'm going to go to prison right now in America or in another country, like, but there's some consequence that makes me lose the war, which means me building a wealthy life in America.
That's right. And I have to ask.
Right. Myself. But again, I can't like full permission for myself. Like I can kill this person. Like I will go in. I do not give a fucking fuck.
That's right.
But
I'm not willing to pay my life and I'm not willing to pay my goals for this immediate satisfaction. And so I say no, you know, and that ultimately is how you condition yourself. But some people go to journaling and they write that conversation out. Other times it really is just like they meditate on it and they think on it. It is going to be a practice though, because it is about truly being able to have that conversation. At some point it becomes habitual, right? You immediately negotiate your way out of it. Like you're almost immediately snapping out of it. Like I've told people, look, I don't hold grudges. It's not worth it. You know, it's not my baggage. I ain't carrying it, you know? And I'm not the type of person who goes out of her way to be vindictive because I feel like karmic debt sorts itself out and I'm not it. So whatever, you know, let's just move on. I mean, and so I'm really the type of person who has learned a lot about my response tends to diffuse an otherwise out of control situation in many cases. And yes, to your point, I don't always feel what I am. There is a disconnect there, but those are two separate
parts. And I really want to speak more about that. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, and so it's really no different than how we're overriding a lot of things. Like, you know, like modern society has found a way to override having, you know, the physiological desire to have kids. Like,
sure.
We've overridden that, you know, flying an airplane. We've overridden the code. Like we're not flying animals. We are not flight animals. And yet here we are flying in a lobby up in the sky, 6 miles. Like
that we can control ourselves, right?
We
can
control ourselves. Like we've found ways to override our very own nature. So that we have these overrides is good and bad, right? It can either be weaponized against us or it can be to our benefit. And sometimes if we can throttle our external response and hold that energy inside, and I'm not saying choke on it, right? That's unhealthy, but you need to go process and reconcile that somewhere else. This is not the time or the place. And you're doing this because you're making chess moves while somebody else is playing checkers. You know what I'm saying? Like you're playing a bigger game than they are. And it's like, and that should not be derailing you, you know? And that's something that you just kind of have. And I mean, if you're speaking in terms of hierarchies, that's exactly it. What the fuck are you doing with this tic-tac-toe bullshit while I'm over here playing chess? Like, why am I even bothering with this? Like, why is this a thing? You know? And it's like, yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah, it's annoying. Yeah, you're wrong. But what difference does it make whether you ever learn that lesson to me or not? It's
right.
You know,
and,
I gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, and I feel like this is going to be a theme for the upcoming months, at least for me and in my circles, where, you know, we're doing the thing, we're doing the patience, we're not feeling patience. Mm-hmm. And without getting into too much details, like using my own lost battles without going into the details of the battles, right? I have a temporary green card. I cannot afford any criminal charges.
Right.
Yet I was dealing with a person that was threatening me to unjustly, right, to put shit on my name that I would have never done, would never do, would never participate in. And the injustice, right? Because then you come into like core values. Like I feel how, like I'm just living my life. I've never met you. Who are you? But you have almost like this power over me, right? That's how it feels. That's not what it is. That's how it feels, right?
Yeah.
So not responding to that and holding that, like, the injustice, and it goes deep. Like I could feel it in my whole body, dude. I would wake up weeks later, like still like having revenge fantasies, right? Like this is how deep it is. But making the choice, I'm not reacting, but being fully on fire, right? Yeah. And that takes practice.
It does. That's all there is. Like, and I think that because it is a very sophisticated thing to override your primal desire and your initial gut response. It is. It you're overriding code. Like that's what you're doing. And you have to, you're doing it in real time as it's happening. You know, so I mean, give yourself some credit for not being able to feel as benevolent as you're acting right now. Like, you know, like it's okay. Like, you know, I mean, you're busy overriding the code in your head that says you need to strangle this bitch. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I am currently overriding that right now and saying just, mm-hmm. I'm calming down. I'm taking a deep breath. I'm going to walk away from this. And that's what we're doing. And I think some of the things that help people, right? The things that help people the most is coming up with a way to couch it in and almost analogizing it and giving it some sort of allegorical like thing where it's like, if overriding code makes sense to you and resonates with you, then think of it in those terms. If, you know, holding the tension resonates with you, it's all the same. These are all euphemisms for the same fucking thing. So like, but it's sometimes it helps to just, I think that some of the biggest hurdles can be overcome by just hearing it a different way and like being Absolutely. Able to couch it in a different frame of mind so that works for you. Like if looking at it this way makes sense, then that's what you're doing. But whatever it is, if the net outcome is this, then you've accomplished it and you did the thing.
Right. And for me, we're called Fearless Wealth for a reason. For me, the one thing that absolutely pulls me through everything is like, if I desire to be a billionaire, right, and self-built billionaire, would it work in my benefit to be upset by this thing that's happening right now? And the answer is always no. Unless, you know, we're talking about bankruptcy or like some like big, you know, investment stuff. But it's always no. But I always have to go back. And I'm saying this and my friends hear me say it in my journal. I'm still filled with it, right? Where it's like, okay, if I desire to become a billionaire or somewhere on the path of it, can I afford, ironically using the money language, can I afford to react on this right now?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Yeah, the expense it's incredible how expensive our response and behaviors can be. Because like I said, there's no silver bullet to getting out of your shit, but there also wasn't one particular thing that got you there either. It was a series of things. It was a series of things that got you there. You don't get fat off of one burrito. It's the consistency of it. And so it's worth examining our habitual behaviors to say, am I habitually doing this to me? Am I habitually setting myself up to fail? You know, and if I can habitually get myself into shit, I can habitually get myself out of shit, which is empowering, right? That is actually great news, because I can't just say there was one thing that got me here when I know for a fact I've made a series of really ridiculous choices that landed me here. And that means I can reverse engineer this thing. So let's go. And the thing is, though, is that you were like space trash at one point. You got yourself into your ship. You were just floating in this, in space and waiting for things to move you in one direction or another. And you got yourself here aimlessly, got yourself into trouble. You weren't trying to get yourself into trouble. So that took a while. But when you're trying to get out, that's going to move a lot fucking faster because you're actually diligently working toward getting out of your shit. So like, that's actually a much more abbreviated timeline, the solution is, especially when you're committed to it. And I think, you know, I think people should be heartened by that. I think people should realize, look, it took you a lot longer than you think it did to get you here, but it's going to take a considerably less amount of time to get out.
Absolutely.
If you're committed, and you, because now you're actually planning on it. Like, you're actually coming up with a strategy to do it, as opposed to somebody who just aimlessly landed in a shitty place, you know?
Yeah. And one major thing that's been, and I'll forever vouch on this till ad nauseum, is any version of bilateral movement. I swear by walking, but I think it helps processing and holding any void tension, discipline in discomfort so much, and it processes. Mm-hmm. Like, we need the physical movement. We cannot just think ourselves out of, you know, these discomforts of habitual stuff.
It is an active process. It is. And it's a combination of things, right? It's a combination of physically moving, mentally reconciling, making it make sense. You know, there is a lot of that. Like, because it's hard. It's hard when you're faced with an unjust situation and you're trying to make sense of it. I mean, it's hard because there's all sorts of shit that intrudes the brain to try, because you're testing theories out. And some of those theories are harsh. Did I deserve this? Who did I piss off to get to deserve this? You know, and you start going through that whole deserving bullshit. Then you go through the whole, like, wait a second, is there something I missed? Did I set myself up for this? Did I actually fuck up? Did I do this? You know, and it's like, no, I didn't do that. You know, but you've got to entertain all the theories, and that's a lot. Like, it hurts to hear some of those things from yourself, and you can't get stuck on it, you know, because you can't just sit there and say, it is my fault, if it isn't, right? Because then there's nothing you can do. And so now you're just sitting there just holding a bunch of shit. If it is your fault, how can I make it right? You know,
right.
If it isn't my fault, then what the fuck? I need to figure out where to put this and where it makes sense, because it's just kind of taking space in my brain. Yeah.
Well, and it's a challenging but good exercise, and purely for the sense of exercise, not to adopt it as a full truth, but to exercise the idea. If this is exercising the idea, this is fully my fault. Where do I divert in future? Right? Like, even in my case, you know, I had to get a restraining order against people, etc. Where, if this is all my fault, right? All this injustice that happened is my fault. How do I, meaning I recognize certain signs earlier and fucking get the fuck out.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
I don't want to be even associated. Don't want these people to know my name, let alone have, you know, whatever, any access to me. So the exercise, if I am fully responsible for this, how do I change this in the future? How do I adapt? How do I avoid this? That's such a great one. And then, right. And then coming back to a full balance where it's like, I can control, like, people do shitty stuff regardless of how much responsibility I take. Right.
That's right.
But still, like, playing with that exercise has been very interesting and helpful.
It is actually very helpful, because it actually feels better
to powerful
all on yourself.
Yeah, and then powerful.
And then watch some of it have to go away because it isn't yours, you know, like, and realizing and letting it go. It's, you start, you take the full weight of the problem on yourself, and then you shed the pounds of the things that aren't yours.
Don't you? Come here. Good boy. Come here. Come here. Come here. Good boy.
That's important. Like, I think it's really important that people do it. Like, because then you're left with what's yours. You know, like, in my divorce, same thing. Like, I recognize that there were things that I just missed. Like, that's on me. It's not, I don't blame him for being him. He was always himself. And I sat there and I did a lot of acrobatics to make it work in my head. That's me. Like, I can't, I'm not mad at him for it. I don't hold him, you know, I don't blame him for it. There's somebody out there who's going to want that. And that's going to be really great for them. And so it's like, it just wasn't for me. And I was trying to force myself into a situation that I didn't belong in. And that was, you know, and that was on, and I own that part. Like, it's my fault. That part is mine, you know? And it's like, okay, he can own his actions and his responses and everything he's done. But I did have a part in its failure. Sure. You can't have a relationship where one person is 100% to blame. You know, like even in the really shitty ones, it's like, how long did you stick around? Like, how long?
You made the choice. You chose that person. How long did you stick around? How long did you make a try? What did you do? How much you abandoned yourself to make a try, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's okay to say that. That's not victim blaming. Mm-hmm. That's personal responsibility. And I think people need to know the difference, you know, that blame is external and responsibility is internal. You know, blame is what I ascribe to what others do that I can't control. Responsibility is everything I can control. So you don't get off the hook because somebody was a dick. Like,
right.
Like, you don't.
And responsibility, you know, and practicing this, and what Jocko calls it, extreme ownership. I think that's the book. Like, again, he goes into way extreme, right? And people who are kind of stuck in somewhat a version of victim, hood and mindset are doing the ones that one that always comes up is like, if I'm in a car and someone is drunk and someone, you know, bunges into me, you know, and I'm in a car crash. Like, clearly that's, you know, I couldn't have done anything. I'm like, well, no, because you had the choice to not get in your car that day, right? Okay. Like it, responsibility gives you power because it creates and illustrates how much choice you actually have.
That's right. And so the question is, when you left your house, you made a risk assessment knowing that there is a possibility, however slight when you left, that somebody could do this. And you said that risk is acceptable to me.
Absolutely.
In order for me to get to my destination. You said that. You might not have spoken it out loud, but that is tacitly what you accepted when you left your fucking house and got in your car that day. And I'm not saying that the drunk driving is your fault. I'm saying own the fact that you left the fucking car, that you left in your car. The fact that you left that day and you knew that that was a risk, at least that, right? Like, it's like when people talk about, like, people got really, really pissed about who's that guy in Kenosha, the kid that ended up shooting three people, and Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah.
So a lot of people.
Oh, shit. We're going into Rittenhouse now. Oh, my God. Let me sit for it because I'm ready.
I just used it as an example. I had so many people coming at me saying he wasn't supposed to be there. He should have never gone in the first place. And his mother is neglectful, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, but shoulda, coulda, woulda, he did, right? He ended up going. I said, that's like saying she snuck out of the house and went to a party she was not allowed to go to. And then she got attacked while she was there. Okay. She wasn't supposed to go to the party. But when she defended herself while she was there, she was very justified in doing so. Like,
there we go.
She's not saying, you're not saying that by virtue of going to this party, she consents to anything that happens to her. No.
There we go. And with Rittenhouse specifically, because again, I'm in the Second Amendment corner of the internet now, and I've only like gun people around me. So this is like a big topic. One thing that I want to preface with, because I know I have a lot of anti-gun people listening, which is fine. I welcome those specifically, is that the judgment of Rittenhouse is kind of divided in three people, three groups. One, the diehard absolute Second Amendment people who know, you know, the container of self-defense. And they're like, oh no, self-defense. Then you have the second group who's like, who exists within the timeline before the video was released, right? So they're just like, you know, this white little kid drove past state lines and shot three people, right? Like, that's kind of the shtick. And then they adjust after they see the video, actual footage where he's running away, he's being haunted, like literally hunted. And people saying, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill you, we're going to shoot you, not verbatim, but those are the words, right? That's the message. He runs away. He's being attacked physically. He shoots. Someone pulls a gun on him. He shoots and people die, right? So then you have that. And then you have the completely delusional people who are like, well, if he was a brown guy, that wouldn't work, or, you know, he shouldn't be there, right? So you have that group. And we could absolutely all, and which I'm absolutely for, we could absolutely assess whether or not it was wise of him to choose to go there, right? Because even, and using myself as a woman, just because I can walk with a firearm in a dark alley doesn't mean it's the best idea for me to do so.
Right.
I can, I have all of the right, I have my firearm on my hip, I have just, you know, right? But should I? Probably not so much of a good idea. Like, it, in talking risk assessment and responsibility, it's probably not the wisest thing to do. And it's the same for the Rittenhouse, right? Was it the wisest thing for him to be there? Probably not. No one, by the way, no one. Also the people who got shot.
Yeah.
The people who were hunting after him were going to kill you. Probably not the wisest thing. Mind you, and again, we're going to go fully back to the conversation. The audacity to run after someone who is carrying a firearm and telling them you're going to kill them.
The delusion that led them to think that that was a good idea. In no timeline would you ever see me doing that.
But
in no timeline.
There's this video of recent protests where a guy tries to, like, the protest gets really big. It's one of the Gaza, I don't fucking even know, at one point what we're arguing about right now, and we're closing highways for. And there's a truck that you know, that is trying to leave, and it hits someone, and everyone runs after him, starts smashing his windows, to which he panics, you know, runs away and hit several people, not by virtue of, like, I wanted to hit these people, or because, you know, I'm trying to get away, not trying to die here. And I'm like, in what world did y'all think that obstructing this metal object that weighs several ton, did you think with your hands climbing on it, punching it, was a good idea and was going to result in no injury?
Right.
How?
I don't know how they got there, I'm going to be honest, because it doesn't make any sense. But, like, the idea that we're obligated to take special care of people who are mad and frustrated or whatever, and that we owe that I have to be the adult in the room for you, and I have to coddle you in some way and take special care for you. That's not a thing. That's not a thing. Not when you're going to a protest. When you're going to a protest, that's like going into a mosh pit. You take what you get, because that you chose to be there in a particular setting that you knew was escalating, and you had a hand in escalating yourself. So you need to dial it back on whose fault is what. It's the disproportionality of it that's where people hang their hat, right? That's where they hang their hat. It's disproportionate in the fact that the truck is considerably stronger than any one human being. Right, but that disproportionality should have factored into your decision rather than his decision. Right?
100%.
It's not the driver who needs to factor that in. You're on the low ground. He's on high ground. You have the disadvantage. If you can't recognize that, any fucking feral animal knows when they're beat. They know it. They don't have to die for it. Most standoffs with animals never really come to blows. They know who's
the winner. No, they really don't.
They recognize who's the winner in this situation, and they back the fuck off, and they're like, you won. I concede this. I don't need to die today. I don't need to get hurt anymore. I'm good. You're the alpha. I get it. I'm out. And they know.
Right. A little before we go into the episode, I've been having and receiving lots of requests on information like, what are my offerings right now? What's happening? What will be happening? And as I am currently kind of aside from being in a rebranding, I'm trying to figure out and level up my own methods right now. So there will be another Dollar Academy, which is the money course, 6 months. I'm currently practicing and working and refining methods for a discipline room, how to become a luck magnet. I have redneck magic coming up. I have rural life. I have Louboutin riches. I have everything. Everything is coming up. Be sure to be subscribed to my email list on thedollaracademy.com. And if you can't find it or if it's too much effort, just hit me with a DM and just give me your name and email, and I'll put you there on manually myself. I have lots of good stuff coming from tiny luck exponential magnet amplifications for like $9 to several thousand dollar programs. So I promise you, I'm trying to cater to as broad as possible, and I'm trying to get everyone involved. So yeah, get involved, and I can't wait to see you in. Oh, and oh my God, I remember, and this is from back. So I left school when I was 15, but I went to school in the hood. Only white girl, only three girls in the class in general. And I remember people were always fucking, again, we're in the hood, people constantly fucking fighting. And I remember one chick trying to start something with me, and I was very much in my, fuck you, I'm from East Europe. I know Western white chick that, is here trying to be like, oh, do, or like, sorry, no, I'm a fucking get at it.
Right.
But I saw that she had a bunch of phrases and names of guys carved onto herself. And I'm like, you know what? Risk assessment, right? If that's something you do to yourself, I'm just bow this one out. And I'm using this always very specifically, like, okay, I'll fucking swallow, like, pride. I can't, I can live with that. Like, okay, I'll just swallow this one, and everyone will think I'm a fucking pussy. That's fucking fine. But I'm like, not worth it. I recognize you because you're too crazy in a disproportionate sense. So I'm not gonna go after you.
And your threshold for pain is considerably higher than mine because you carve
Right.
names on your arm.
Right.
And I'm not mutilating
Right.
myself with people, so
Nope.
that's a thing. But that's it, right? So it's like it comes down to the fact that it's like it's not about whether it should have or could have or whatever. It's that it did, and now we have to work with that. And it's like, so I think a lot of people do get hung up on, well, this shouldn't have happened and they shouldn't have done this and da da da. Should. You don't get to decide somebody else's lesson. You don't get to decide for Kyle what his lesson is from all of this. He's going to learn his own lessons in his good time, and you need to learn your lesson. Your lesson is in watching all of this, what can I take away from it? Is it worth going to protests? No. Is it worth chasing people who have firearms? Probably not. Is it worth, I
Can
don't
we can you repeat that one again? Is it wise to chase someone with a
with a firearm
firearm?
while all I have is a skateboard, by the way, right? Like
Second guy had a firearm, by the way, not his,
that's
right?
true,
And
right?
he pulled it, mind you. He pulled it. So
He
Kyle is
did.
on the floor and he pulls the firearm.
Right. And the first one, the bald guy, he tried to grab his firearm. So like
Right.
I just think like this isn't the bridge you want to die on. And I think people need to start making that assessment for themselves. Like they need to stop with, they need to stop pretending like that's somebody else's responsibility. And I think I think that's where people fall apart, right? It's like you were asking, like, where did we go wrong in teaching people these kinds of, these boundary setting and the responsibility and how to properly assess a situation to where what's in your control and what's not. And I think where we missed out is that there's a lot of, I think the media encourages people to abdicate their responsibility to anyone else, to just outsource it to anyone else. I mean, we're talking about people blaming the Constitution or blaming Second Amendment advocates and blame, like, nah, that's not what did it.
We're
That's
now
not what
blaming
did
the
it.
NRA.
No, you're not anymore. And you know what? I mean, I've even gone as far as to say that, people like to blame colleges for why people, go from like normal to whacked out liberals. And I'm like, that's not because the college. It's because they never knew who they were in the first place, and they were just part of the cult. They
This
were
is
just trying to
difficult.
acclimate to the culture of the school. And for a while, their normal was something you approved of. So you didn't say anything, and you never questioned why they were doing what they were doing, dressing the way they were dressing, talking the way they were talking. It never translated to you that they were still following. They were never self-initiating their own identity in the process. So then when they go to a new campus, they take on the new culture, and you're shocked. And it's like, no, that's a parenting miss. That is not a college problem. That is a parenting problem. Because you should have made sure that they were impervious to other people's peer pressure before they left your house. And instead, you just ignored it because you liked their performance. And that's, you know, and that to me is, that's where we miss. We miss in the fact that we keep outsourcing, giving it to the school, giving it to teachers, giving it to peers, giving it to babysitters, whatever it is. We keep giving out all of the responsibility of making sure the kids stay on a track. So then when you send them out into the real world, they don't know, they're 18. And 18 and 30 year olds today can't handle their business as well as my great grandfather could at 13. 13, he was already betrothed and ready to get married and have kids by 15.
Word.
And he's running a household, holding down two jobs. She's running the household, raising kids at fifth fucking teen because they were trained to do that. And now we've got 30 year olds who are suing their parents because they never consented to being born. So I told Chris, I said, we are the pug generation that descended from wolves. That's what happened. Like, we're just pugs now. We can barely breathe.
We can't turn around when we're on our back. We can't roll back.
That's right. We're just kind of like, we're looking in two different directions at the same fucking time. Like, we're just evolutionary dead ends because we gave up on all of that shit. And it's like, and there's still a chance to reel it in, because I think there are plenty of people who do think the way we do, that care and want to do something else other than just be space trash. But like, but that's where we gave up. As a society, we gave up, you know?
So funny. We're pugs.
We're pugs. Pug generation.
Not us, but the generation.
But in general, yes.
It's, yeah. Yeah. No, let us end on that. We're pugs. All right, this was a good one. This was a good round.
All right.
Hello. Oh, dog is coming to say hi. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Dookie.
Cameo. You're not... appearance.
Hi. Hi to baby. Oh, hi to baby. Oh, hello. Well, we say bye to Auntie Kelly. Everyone, listeners, this was Fearless Wealth with Diamonds and Demons, and we'll be back next week.
All right.
Yes.